Welcome back to Supporting Both Ends of the Lead. I'm Caroline, a certified animal behaviourist.
And I'm Dr. Linda Blair, a clinical psychologist.
We're here to bring you today's double dose of well-being for you and your dog.
And it's time to get started, don't you think?
If you enjoy any form of dog training, whether that just be teaching your dog simple tricks or perhaps you went to puppy classes when they were small, you already know what is the key to creating a successful new habit. You may not realize you know it, but you do. And that is the cue, the behavior, and the reward elements of the habit loop. So when we think about that with our training, we're thinking about asking our dog to do something, the cue, the dog performing the behavior, that response to that cue, and then the reward coming, the thing that we give them that makes them want to do it again for us in the future, whether that be a treat, some playtime, or just some cuddles with you. So what's great to know is that you already have those skills in place to teach your dog to do new things by using those three elements of the habit loop. So it shouldn't be too hard for you to be able to create new habits, or should it, Linda?
Well, that it is exactly applicable to humans, exactly that cue, by the way, is C-U-E. It's not standing in line, but this is exactly what psychologists, but in particular, a psychologist called Charles Duhigg, if any of you want to read about the habit loop, D-U-H-I-G-G, he wrote a book all about habit. And I think he's very clear. So I think it's quite nice. But that's exactly what he talks about, the cue. And then that cue triggers the behavior, and the behavior gets a reward. Now, we get to choose the behavior that we want to make a habit. I think, Caroline, it isn't quite the same with dogs, is it?
No, you're right. So obviously, for our dogs, poor things, they don't get a lot of choices in their life. We do make a lot of choices for them. And those choices can be for them to be able to successfully live in our world, or safely, I should say, live in our world. So, for example, being able to get them to come back to us when we call their name or use their recall cue is a really easy example for us all to understand. We need that for safety, so that our dogs aren't going to run onto a road or disappear away from us. But we also need that to kind of create a great bond and be able to have fun off-lead walks. Because if we don't have reliable recall, then our dogs don't have the freedom to roam and explore and sniff and do all the fun things that they can do if they don't have that lead kind of restricting their choices when they're off-lead. And so one of the things I was reading about and before we were talking today was about how there can be a fourth element to this habit loop, the craving. And I think that's what's really important for our dogs. So when we, because like Linda says, we get to choose the behavior for our dogs, they don't get to choose what behavior we're teaching them. So we need to make sure that the craving is there for that reward. So when we're cueing a behavior, if we're asking them to say here, or come here, whatever cue you might use, we need to make sure that that sparks a little kind of moment of recognition in their brain where they go, ah, I want that desirable of outcome. I want to go to my human because I know that reward is good enough, whether that be it is a piece of stinky sausage, or it be that you are going to throw their favorite ball for them, or you're going to have a game of tuggy, whatever it might be that kind of really sparks their motivation. And that really is the big thing when it comes to dogs. Quite often we miss what is motivating for our individual dog, be that based on breed traits, like squeaky balls for terriers, or whether that be on the individual personality or the age of our dog. We need to make sure that that craving is going to be there because we choose the right reward once the dogs do the behavior.
And that reminds me of something we'd love to hear from you, which is your dog's breed and what creates a craving in them. Because although I always know Caroline knows about 3,000 times more than anybody else I know about dogs, we can still learn more. And you would be our best teachers because you spend so much time with your own dog. I also wanted to say something about the behavior for the human side of keeping a resolution. And that is that if you must listen to your self-talk. And if you say to yourself, you know, I really should run the half marathon this year, I would ask you please to throw that resolution out the window immediately, because the word should means that you're trying to please other people, probably please somebody in your past that you never did please enough and you probably never will, so forget it. Or you're trying to present yourself as someone you're not really comfortable with, not really. You just think it looks good. If instead you say to yourself, you know, I'd love to be able to run a half marathon, there you go. That's your resolution for this year. Because that comes from your heart. And I really want you to choose something that comes from your heart. Never mind what anybody else is doing or what anybody else thinks of you. Please do that. And in the habit loop, one other thing, if I can hog the air for a moment, which is about reward. We tend to forget, and I bet this is even true for dogs, but you're going to have to say in a minute, Caroline. But if you give yourself a reward that's going to be realized way far ahead, you're less likely to stick with the behavior because the reward doesn't feel immediate enough. The craving, the desire for a reward is an emotional thing, and emotions in people are children forever. Children don't like to wait. So, please, let's say that you want to lose a stone because you want to be able to wear this particular two-piece suit when you go on your holiday in the summer. That's fine, but what you do is your reward is for every, I don't know, 1 kilo or whatever it is you want to think you could, probably half a kilo that you could do in a week, lose in a week. Then you get to put down £5 towards your holiday or whatever, so that there's something tangible within a week in terms of a reward. Maybe even quicker for dogs, eh?
Oh, absolutely. I think dogs, are eternal children themselves completely, brain and emotionally. And so, yeah, they absolutely need for that kind of cause and effect to really make sense to them. We need to normally reward within about a second of the behavior starting, or within 5 to 6 seconds of the behavior finishing. But it depends on the level of training your dog has taken, how established they are in understanding that reward history is coming from their human. But if you're new to training with your dog, then we do want to make sure that that reward comes pretty quickly, or at least a signal of reward is coming comes sooner. So maybe you're using a clicker or a marker word, something that is being conditioned to your dog so that they know, aha, that reward will come when I get to my human, or that reward will come when my human manages to find the treat pouch, or whatever the case might be.
You know, you make me laugh because you've given me such a clear memory. About two dogs back in my life, I was trying to teach Molly to sit, and I was slow on the reward. And Molly, after she sat, but then she reached back around to scratch her bum. And I qu quickly gave her the treat. Guess what she did next time I said sit? She started scratching her bum. So I see what you mean. It really does have to be quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, because unfortunately, we can't say to them, like, verbally, oh, it was that part of what you just did that I really loved. So that's why sometimes using a marker can be really helpful for our dogs in understanding what it is that we want, or what's going to get that desired result, that craved reward. But we do need to make sure that our timing, where possible, particularly when it's coming to training, there's so many elements in our life with our dogs where we actually need to take more time and give our dogs more time and space to help support them behaviourally so that they can be free in the world and be able to process and have emotions and all of those side of things. But when it comes down to actual training, and when we're talking about goals and resolutions, we tend to be talking about things we want to achieve quite quickly. You know, when it comes to training, we do need to be quick on the timing. And that's why I do love using a clicker, because I don't know why, but just that brain message going from our head to our hand to click rather than our head to our mouth to speak, it just seems to be much more precise. I'm sure you'll have some ideas on that.
Well, no, I think the thing I like about clickers, and I was very reluctant to try one because I thought, oh, it's my voice they want. Actually, I now see that my voice is different every time I say the you know, good doggy or whatever, which could be huge to the dog, whereas the click is always the click. I mean, it never changes. So I can now understand why you were so keen on clickers when you were training me, not me personally, but my dogs. So thank you for that. That's a good point to make. I just wanted to take a moment to add something which is kind of more just for humans, but I bet you'll find a way that it applies to dogs, because you always do, Caroline. I didn't talk about it last time, but it is awfully important, and that is the power of social pressure in making sure that you stick with your resolution through hard times. Now, what do I mean about social pressure? I do not mean going on social media and announcing your goals. That's not it, because those people, you don't know who reads it, and you don't know if you know them or anything else, so it doesn't give you the reward I'm talking about. The motivation I'm talking about, perhaps reward isn't the right word. I mean social pressure in two ways. One is to buddy up. Let's say that you do want to get to the point where you can run 3 times a week just for 20 minutes. You want to be able to go out for a run. Do it with somebody else. If you have to put on your gym kit on a cold morning, you may not want to, but if you have to put it on, because otherwise you let down your best friend, you'll put it on. So one of the ways to make use of the power of social pressure is to make use of our human innate desire to be pleasing to one another, to be good in groups. So buddy up. And the other one is a little more rotten, really. It's not really fair, but it's so powerful. Choose somebody you really admire, someone you would like to be like, that you know pretty well. I mean, it has to be somebody you know pretty well. And announce to them that by March 18, you're going to be ready to run the half marathon or whatever your goal is. And the reason for that, it goes back to very early childhood, when our entire purpose in life as babies is to please our carers. Because if we don't please our carers, of course, they don't necessarily want to look after us. And if they don't look after us, we die, because human beings, of all creatures on this planet, spend relatively more of their time completely dependent on their carers than any other creature. The reason being that makes our brains so plastic. We're so able to adapt, to learn whatever language we were born into, to learn the social habits and diet. But the cost is our dependence on carers. So any authority figure or any person you admire later in life is a kind of parent substitute. It's not direct, but kind of. So the power of that, I can't let George down. I've told him I'm going to do this. By golly, I got to do it. That is a wonderful thing to do. So social pressure, buddy up and tell your resolution to someone who's a parental type figure, so that you feel that you'll adhere to the hard work ahead.
Definitely. I know that as a human, if I want to go work out, then having somebody with me for sure makes it easier. But remember, our dogs can provide that social pressure for getting out, at least in a positive way, for going for a walk every day. So they are great to help us to be a little bit more healthy, a little bit more sociable, a little when we don't want to go out on a murky day, they might be that sort of nose nudging in your leg that says, "Come on, let's do it anyway." So yeah, there are sometimes our dogs can be that for us. I wanted to move on to how we can be a little bit more successful, a little bit more consistent, perhaps with our training goals when it does come to creating new habits. If we are thinking actually our habit or our resolution for this year, or our goal or challenge for this year is that we'd really love to be able to teach our dogs something specific. And I'll just use that recall example because it's such a common challenge for pet parents like yourselves. So I'll just use that. So say if we said we really want to get our dogs to be able to come back to us happily, reliably, committed. They really want to be a part of the walk with us. We feel like we're a team going out into the world. And we want to be able to do that so that when we're going away, I don't know, maybe you're going to the beach on the in the summer, we know that we can let them off the lead and have a wonderful time together. So as Linda said, obviously that's quite a big goal, and that's not breaking down, and that reward is a long time away. So we do need to make sure that we are keeping ourselves on track by making it fun along the way. And some of that can be setting tasks into very small sections. So thinking about today when, and I mentioned this last in the last episode, you know, today when we go outside, instead of looking for trying to let my dog off the lead, I'm going to look to try and get their focus as we step out the door. And just working on that, or even before you've opened the front door, because how many of you have dogs who, as soon as that lead is on, they're going, right, let's go, and they've lost focus on you already. So actually training at home before you leave can actually be a great way to kind of ease your focus and ease your kind of commitment together into the walk. And I often talk about the walk as being a walk of three parts: a start, a beginning, sorry, a beginning, a middle, and an end. Just like a storybook. And we need that beginning to get ourselves hooked into the storyline, just as our dogs need that beginning to get hooked with us into how the walk is going to look and how they should respond. And the ending is all about us, and we'll talk about this, I'm sure, in another podcast, is about how we get our dogs to be able to kind of decompress from those exciting experiences and relax afterwards. But to get yourself in a place where you're going to be more consistent and you're going to be able to start that those steps towards that massive goal, but in these tiny little sections you're going to have put down for yourself. I thought it was interesting. I was reading about how the key to being successful, even with our habits, is to make to have some sort of visual cue or something that helps us to really keep on track. And we need to make it so that it's obvious to ourselves, that it's attractive, that it's easy, and that it then is satisfying when we've done it. So I thought I'd talk about kettle training, if you don't mind me continuing for a moment, Linda.
That sounds like a workout. I can do kettlebells.
Yep, we're not talking kettlebells. We're talking the kettle that you boil maybe a few times a day for a cup of tea, and how that can
Kettle.
be useful in your training with your dogs. So bear with me, but I think it's really important that we have some sort of visual cue that helps us so that it's obvious for us what we're going that training needs to happen, that it keeps visually reminding us that training needs to happen, and that it's easy for us to get that visual reminder. Because as we move over to the kettle, we see that treat pot that you're going to place next to your kettle. Perhaps you've put a little note from that reminded you of what you did yesterday's training session, and a reminder of what you might want to achieve in today's training session next to it. And it's a nice, pretty pot, so it's easy and attractive. It makes you want to put your hand in there, and I'm sure your dog's puppy dog eyes, as they see you moving towards that treat pot, will also make you want to put your hand in there. and then think about that time of the kettle boiling or your tea steeping, that 2 or 3 minutes. That is a great amount of time to be working with your dog. It means that they are going to be so much more successful because they haven't got a long time to need to work with you. Their brains, as I think I said is, again last week, was, you know, are very similar to toddlers, and so attention span is small. And breaks frequently during training sessions are really important, as are keeping those learning times short and more frequent. So you can commit, if you want to do 20 minutes of training a day, put that into 5 or 10 little short 2 to 3 minute training sessions instead. And that will mean that you're going to be more consistent. And every time you boil that kettle, or if you're not a tea or coffee drinker, put it on your fridge, or put it by the remote control and do it during advert breaks, whatever it can be that is going to help you to be consistent. But make sure that you are making it obvious to yourself, making it attractive, easy, and that there's something that you do at the end of each training session that makes it satisfying for both of you. So for your dogs, that's probably the treat you've been giving them. But for you, it might be that you then go and enjoy that cup of tea, or you have a snuggle with your dog on the sofa and allow yourself the time to drink that tea nice and peacefully and quietly.
I like that. And it really applies to humans, some of what you're saying too, for our own goals. Because remember I said a little while ago that when you reward yourself, you're appealing to your emotions, and that's the child side of you, which is why it needs to be pretty immediate. I mentioned this last time, but I just want to remind you that in the same way, you want to set your steps small. Have your overall goal and break it down into steps that can be achieved, if you remember what I said last time, in 5 days. But then set yourself a week so you have a bit of slack. And make sure that at the end of that week, there is a reward, which may not be the complete reward, of course not, but it's like we used with a holiday analogy, something that applies to a bigger reward is fine. One other thing I wanted to remind you about is the use of positive wording. So no stop, I'm going to stop something, I'm going to quit something, I'm going to lose something. No. I'm going to be healthier in this measurable way, or I'm going to my diet is going to improve in this measurable way. So that's what you look for. And just as you used, can you remind me what it was again? It was those three words. It's attractive, I remember.
Obvious, attractive, easy, and satisfying.
Okay, I love that. Can I offer an acronym to help you guys remember when you're working on your habit, which is SMART, SMART, setting SMART goals. There's a there was a guy called George Doran. He was of all things, he was the head of a water company in Washington State. But he wrote an article, just as he often did in the ni early 1980s, one of his motivational articles about why not set yourself, this was for his management team, SMART goals. And this has been used ever since, just this one short article. SMART stands for specific, measurable, appropriate, time bound. Okay, let's just take that apart for a sec. Specific, remember I said it had to be something that you can visualize, that you really could tell to someone else and they could do the same thing. Measurable, that goes along with specific. It's something where you know when you're making progress or when you're static. Appropriate means it, not a should, but an I'd love to. Yeah. And time bound, remember you're going to set an end goal and break it up into small weekly steps. I would throw in one other word, persistence. Remember, we talked about Philippa Lally's study last time where it takes nearly 10 weeks for a habit to get automatic. So you got to stick with it. But if you do SMART goals plus persistence, you'll be a winner this year, I promise.
That's fantastic.
You know what I just realized? I've just told you all about SMART goals, but I didn't. I told you about SMAT goals, didn't I? I forgot the R. I'm so sorry. The reason I did, I think, is probably because it's so tied to appropriate, to the A. It's specific, measurable, appropriate, relevant. And appropriate and relevant are all about making sure that it's what you'd love to do, that it's for you, not for others. And then the T is time bound. Sorry about that.
So I feel like we should probably wrap things up with our just one thing to make sure that you've taken away what we wanted you to kind of hopefully be inspired by to move towards your resolutions and goals in creating these new wonderful habits for yourself or for your dogs. So mine would be put some treats by your kettle. It's simple as that.
I love that because it's such a great reminder. It's just such a fun reminder. And it's another thing about humans. It's a bonding thing. It's an us thing. You know, every time I take a break, you're there. Oh, that's just gorgeous, Caroline. I really like it. Mine, I think, would be measurable. Make sure you know that you're making progress. And keep those steps small, but it's making it measurable that will really help you stay on track. And I throw in social pressure.
You always love to have a second, don't you?
I know, I can't stick with
it. We're going to have to say just two things, I think, from now on.
Maybe so.
But as Linda said earlier in today's episode, we really would love to hear from you. It would be great to hear what goals or challenges you have set for you and your dogs this year, whether there's anything we could support you with in perhaps moving towards those. And over the, you know, we're really excited for this year and over the coming months of what different topics and different areas of dog and human psyche we can kind of delve into together. So we hope you'll continue to join us on this journey.
Yes, and we're so motivated to have the habit of these podcasts and to share that habit with you as you're developing habits. But I will say that for us, it's not a clear goal yet because we want you to give us the goal. Please let us know what you'd like to hear. And we'll do our very best to make that clear and achievable for you and for you and your dog.